Good morning, welcome back to Nachyami. Today we're going to be learning together Daniel Perek Zion, the 7th chapter of the book of Daniel. The book of Daniel now changes. Up till now we've had essentially 6 chapters of narrative, of stories, of interactions of Daniel and his friends with the kings of Babylon and Media. Now we have visions of Daniel. From Perek Vov onwards, it's the visions that Daniel has by himself. We're going to look at our parak of 28 psukim into 2 basic sections, each made up of 14 psukim. First 14 and second 14. The first 14 are the vision he sees at night, and the second 14 are the interpretation. Just a word of preface, Rav Sadia Gaon says that these visions were meant specifically for him. So these are not meant as discussions or as conversations to be had or to be told to the rest of the Babylonians or the Persians around him. These were specifically for him to be recorded for generations. There is a discussion as to whether these were regular levels of prophecy, like the Ma'ari Kura says these are regular prophecies, whereas the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim says these are lower than Nevuah. They were a dream, like Shlomo Melech had a dream. It wasn't a prophecy, it was a lower level, which is why he needed an interpreter and an interlocutor to understand what was really going on. Let's jump straight in. We have the first pasuk introduces our parak, where this occurs during the first year of the reign of Belshazzar. Daniel has a dream at night, and he wrote down the general, the Rosh Tevois, the general topics of what this was about. This also should give it, put it in context to us. This is before Daniel has met with Belshazzar. So on the one hand, he has the public persona as being the person who's the dream interpreter, as being the advisor to the king. On the other hand, he also has this we'll call private dimension interaction with God and seeing what's happening. So here's what he sees. In Psukim Beis to Gimel, we're told that he describes seeing a vision of the sea being buffeted from all 4 directions by the wind. And he describes ascending from the ocean 4 creatures, each different from one another. In Psukim of Dalet to Vav, he tells us what those creatures look like. The first 3 are as follows. The first one is a lion with eagle's wings as it arises from the sea. And its wings got pulled off. It's plucked out, and it begins to stand on its rear legs like a human being, and is given a human heart. Creature 1. The second creature is similar to a bear, which stands on one of its sides. It has 3 ribs between its teeth, and people turn to it and say, "Eat a lot of meat." Creature 2. The third creature is like a leopard, but it has 4 wings and 4 heads, and it was given total control. Creature 3. We now meet the fourth creature, which is much more terrifying. He has another vision of this fourth creature, and it's much more terrifying, it's much more awesome and strong. It has iron teeth, it ate everything and crushed the rest, and it would trample anything that's left over. It is different from the creatures before it. It isn't like a particular beast that we know, and it has upon its head 10 horns. And upon careful inspection, Daniel sees that there's a small horn which grows among the others, pushing out 3 of the previous horns. And this small horn has human eyes and a mouth which speaks gedolos, big ideas, big things. So this is there's a lot, obviously, to absorb here. Let's go a little further. In Psukim Tes to Yud Beis, we're told that he asks about that there's a judgment that he sees happening. He sees that the seats are taken in the Atik Yomin, which means the ancient one of days, the one who controls time, referring to Hashem, ostensibly, sits down, and it describes him wearing white robes and hair like cleaned wool. His throne is made up of tongues of fire, and the wheels are burning fire. And a river of fire extends out in front of him, and it describes how a thousand serve him, and tens of thousands are in judgment before him, and the books of judgment are opened in front of him. And the horn with the mouth speaks until the beast that it was on is killed and destroyed and sent into the fire. And the other beasts are removed from power but are left alive. At which point, finally the prophecy or this vision closes in Psukim Yud Gimel and Yud Dalet, in which he now has another vision where clouds bring a vision or of a person, human being, who is brought in front of the Atik Yomin. And this person is given the power, the honor, and the dominion. All the nations serve under his dominion and will never be destroyed. A lot to think about over here. Just one quick question before we go further. Is this Atik Yomin clearly refers to Hashem, as many of the Forshim say? If that's the case, how could it be that Hashem is given physical, corporeal description here? The Rambam, in general, who's very against this, describes in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, Perek Aleph, that this is this anthropomorphism's description of Hashem in these terms is Lefi Daton Shel B'nei Adon Hu. Because we human beings can only recognize what is tangible, what is concrete, so Hashem describes his expression, his vision in a concrete way, but obviously it's not to be taken as such. The Rambam uses this pasuk as an example. Okay, so you have this vision is really complex, it's very hard to understand. What does it mean? In fact, we're not the only ones that are confused. It says, starting from Sukkim Tezvov to Tezzain, which is when Daniel wakes up, it sounds like he becomes weak and confused from the visions he has. And he turns to one of the Omdim, one of the standing ones, and he asks for an interpretation. And this interpreter explains that the four creatures are four rulers of earth, and the Almighty will receive the kingdom from them, all four of them, forever and ever. Just a few basic questions. Who is the minister? So Rashi says it refers to an angel. Angels are called stationary, omdim, as opposed to human beings are called mahalchim, who are always progressing and growing and changing. An angel is considered stationary. Who are these four kingdoms? What does it mean to say there's four kingdoms? So there's a lot of debate about this, but in general, based on most of the Mefarshim, creature one is clearly Babylon. The idea of this lion with the eagle wings, that's because the first kingdom, which was identified in the parallel four kingdoms in the statue, the gold, the silver, the bronze, and the iron clay statue, earlier on in Perek Beis, was in fact the first head, the golden head, was given to Babylon. So this is clearly Babylon, referring to the Babylonian Empire. It also makes sense because the heart was given, a human heart was given to Nebuchadnezzar after his madness and isolation finished. Eagle wings could be referring to the arrogance of this kingdom, that it rose up very high, but its wings were clipped. And some of the Mefarshim say it could be referring to the successors, Evil Merodach and Belshazzar, who were clipped later on under the Persians. The second creature, according to many, refers to Persia, a bear, and Rashi explains because he was more animalesque than the lion, much more barbaric and lived a very, sort of eat and reproduce in a very animalistic way, as opposed to the Babylonians, are a little more regal, like a lion. The reason why it's the bears on one side is because they have two sides to the kingdom. First, there were Medians under Darius, and then there were the Persians under Cyrus. The three ribs in his mouth could be because there's three subsections of the Persian Empire, which were all always in a constant state of rebellion at different times. The third creature, according to many, is Greece. And this is the leopard, the ferocious and brazen leopard. Why does it have four wings? Because of the quick conquest of the entire known world. Alexander the Great, lived only into his 30s, but he conquered the entire known world in an extremely fast amount of time. The four wings could also refer to the fact that ultimately his kingdom was broken down. After Alexander died, his kingdom was divided into four separate sections and the four separate generals who took over different areas. Ptolemy, Seleucus, Assyria, and Babylon were all just under different dominions thereafterwards. So it could be referring to the four wings. And the fourth creature, obviously, is very different. It doesn't have a name of its own. It's overwhelming and terrifying, and it sounds like it has military sway over the entire world. We'll see in just a moment that, because Daniel asks exactly that. What does the fourth creature mean? And so the angel who's helping Daniel explains that he redescribes this monster, this creature, and he says that this one will have the little horn, so to speak, that grew out of the rest of the horns and has a mouth, will fight against the holy ones and will succeed until the time of judgment arrives. In fact, he goes on to describe that he explains that the fourth creature will come to the land and be different from all the rest of the kingdoms. He'll consume the whole earth and grind it down. And from him, 10 kings or horns will ascend. And the last king will be different from the rest of them and overcome the previous three kings. That's the small horn which will arise from its head. And he'll speak against the Most High and harass the ministers and will want to change time and religion. Try to change, to gain dominion over time and religion. And it'll be granted to him until a time and half a time. It's very complicated words that are being described here. The way it's described over here is ad idon v'idonon upaleg idon, till a time and half a time, and the judgment will, in the end of the day, it'll be deposed and dominion will be given back to the holy ones for all time, at this point in time it will never be contested. And Daniel concludes by saying he is confused and alarmed about his visions and he cannot put them out of his mind. So just a few basic questions. So who is this fourth empire? Many say it refers to the Romans. And, so the 10 horns and the 10th horn, so the Malbim and Rashi say the 10 horns refers to the 10 Caesars of the empire, the Roman Empire before Titus. So Julius, Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero, Galba, Otho, Vitellius, and Vespasian, who were the emperors before, or the Caesars before Titus being the 10th one. Rav Sadia Gaon talks about the seat of power of the Roman Empire as it emerged, or perhaps world power moved from different centers, as he describes Constantinople, Armenia, Hungary, Germany under the Holy Roman Empire, Bulgaria, Canaan, which is the Slavic countries, France, Spain, Russia, and finally the Arab Empire. It's the way that Rav Sadia Gaon understands the transfer of power through the world. This tenth horn, which has eyes and a mouth, Abba Ben El says refers to the institution of papacy, the Roman Catholic Church, and as opposed to kings after Constantine, when we have now the emergence of the papal empire, is what's being referred to. Here, remember, Abba Ben El is speaking from personal experience in the 1400s, dealing with the Roman Catholics and the terrible, terrible destruction they wreak in the Iberian Peninsula in Spain, in which he has first-hand experience and negotiates with. The Ibn Ezra said that this vision has not yet arrived. It refers to the arrival of the power of Islam. And the horn is that of Islam is going to be the small horn which arises and supplants the horns of the previous Christian kingdoms in the world. The Rama Minigeres Taiman says to the people of Yemen that it refers to the false messiahs of history and the destructions they will bring with their mouths. That's what's being referred to here. Very complex as to what's going on. What does it mean that this empire is trying to seek control over time and place? Rav Sadia Gaon points out that up till now the Babylonian, Persians, and Greeks sought military control, and perhaps even, you know, we'll call it educational, philosophical control. But right now, this fourth empire also wants religious control, not just physical persecution, which requires it speaks from its mouth, being the idea of this the yielding an empire which seeks complete control. What does it mean, a time, and half a time, as to when the Mashiach is coming? So complicated. The Mephoroshim spend a lot of time here. Rav Sadia Gaon gives many suggestions as to when this can be. Rashi adopts some of them. The Balmim interprets a number of them. Many of the Mephoroshim say, we don't play with this because Tipach Rucham Shal Mechashrei Kitchen. We're not going to spend time trying to work out the end because it's going to disappoint people. Nonetheless, there seems to be a lot of discussion as to what's really going on over here. And you can look inside and how Rashi works out the Cheshbon of the time of Egypt, the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, the second Beis Hamikdash, 1,335 years from the time of the Bitul HaTamid. All kinds of fascinating suggestions over here. Again, all these suggestions are possibilities and opportunities of when this could happen, not necessarily a exact as to when it has to come. It is worthwhile noting that a lot of this perek is discussed and described in the Maharal's book called Ner Mitzvah on Chanukah, and he describes all of this. And he points out that, in fact, if you go back, there's many other applications of the four kingdoms. One of them is the four words in the beginning of Bereishis, refers to those four dimensions in the world, which means that we're not just talking about kingdoms that happen to arise, we're talking about four elements of chisaron, of lack in the world, which were crystallized into four empires throughout all of history. But these aspects of lack need to be filled because these are voids, these are antimatters almost, which need to be filled. And the idea of four, the Maharal explains in his Sefer Ner Mitzvah, refers to the idea of the oneness, the uniqueness of Israel, which is representing the godliness in this world, dividing into four different ideas and four different directions symbolically, and each of them attacking that oneness from a different dimension. So there's a lot to think about, a lot to digest, and obviously a lot to study more. This is a basic outline. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.